Joining me at 107.3 The Eagle is Rick Wakeman of Yes fame and certainly beyond fame. And they're coming into our Bay Area with ARW, Anderson, Rabin, and Wakeman. And we are looking forward to it, Rick. I want to hear about how the tour is going so far.
It's really good. We're heavily in the middle of rehearsals at the moment, which is great. The first show is October the 4th in Orlando, and rehearsals have been going absolutely fantastic. They really have. And I mean, even better than we all dreamed they could, really. I mean, considering the three of us haven't played together for so many years, it's almost like it was yesterday. It's amazing, really.
I want to ask you, Rick, it comes to mind, I'm sensing, and I don't know about you, but a resurgence of I guess, interest in the fan base of orchestral / progressive rock. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it, you know, as a solo artist for many years now, and I've watched it, you know, grow. A lot of it's down to a lot of young people who weren't around at the time, but were already sort of born 70s, 80s, and even the 90s, who are discovering it. And that's helped a lot by a lot of young musicians, because young musicians have taken the genre of progressive rock or orchestral rock in as much as it was called break the rules. You know, do what you want to do, not what formatted people want you to do. And when you consider perhaps 40, 50 years ago, you know, on AM radio, every single you heard had a format of some sort.
Right.
And now you put on the radio, nothing has a format, which is great. So,
yeah.
And I think that's, I know of a lot of young musicians and young bands who've sort of been taking a real interest in their art, what they're doing, and going back and saying, what's this all about? Where did this all start? Discovering prog rock and orchestral rock and loving it. I mean, I've certainly noticed, just for the shows that I do with orchestras and bands, that over the last sort of 10 years, audiences have, I mean, literally trebled. For example, I did my Journey to the Center of the Earth in the UK in 2014. I did 14 shows there. Now, if you went back 10 years, there probably would have been maybe, I don't know, 1,500 people come to each show, something like that. And every show was sold out. We had 6,000-7,000 at every show. Now, that wouldn't have happened 10, 15 years ago.
No.
There is a resurgence.
You know, what's interesting is my first encounter with Yes, I believe, was 72, 73. It was the Close to the Edge tour. And
right, yeah.
I was just so blown away by that. What has changed, I guess, maybe technically, and what has changed from then and now for you?
Well, I'll just be really honest. Technically, things have improved. I mean, sounds that you could do. I mean, keyboards were very much in their infancy in the early 70s. And, you know, I think now, how the hell did we manage to play that? How the hell did I do that? So that's what's really, really helped tremendously. You know, back then, life was very much pioneering when you came out. You know, you were trying to try out new instruments. I mean, when I first started playing in bands wanted to use multiple keyboards in the late 60s, early 70s, there weren't even keyboard stands. I used to buy chests of drawers and take the drawers out and cut them up to put the keyboards in. You know, that's that when you look back, that's how ancient things were.
Right, right.
But now... Technically, almost anything is possible. Whereas I'm still very much of the opinion that I work hard on my sounds, and I try and make my own individual sounds as to what I do. Back then, keyboards didn't have any presets and things like that. Nowadays, you buy keyboards, they've got like 10,000 presets on them. But I still create my own sounds within all those keyboards, and I think that's one of the keys to what we do too.
Rick, I want to go back if we can. We're talking to Rick Wakeman of Yes fame, and now of course ARW. Do you remember much about the Ziggy Stardust sessions with David Bowie?
Yeah, I did all the with the Hunky Dory sessions, the ones that I did with him. I did do a track on Ziggy, it's true, but the Hunky Dory sessions, the one I remember really well. I mean, David, I did a lot a lot with David. I seem to get remembered for sort of doing Life on Mars and changes and things like that. But I first met him in 1968 and did Space Oddity with him. Then a couple other tracks, Wild Eyed Boy for Free Cloud, Memory of a Free Festival. Then the Hunky Dory album. And then, funny enough, David and I from 1976 to 1980 were neighbours. We both lived in Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
And we saw each other a lot in between tours and various things. And then in the 80s, I did Absolute Beginners with him, and that was great fun. And we just remained, you know, we didn't see each other that often, but we remained good mates, and losing David was a hammer blow for me.
Oh, well, to so many of us, without question, has been a tough year. Certainly Glenn Frey of the Eagles as well.
The last sort of 12 months has just been... Oh. Unbelievable. You know, with Lemmy, of course, with dear Chris Squire. It's just been unbelievable.
Yes.
I've never known anything like it.
Well, you know, on that same vein, and not to go Grim Reaper here, but I was kind of curious, did you have much of a relationship with Keith Emerson?
Yeah, Keith and I were really good friends. I mean, there was it was great. The media made a lot of so-called rivalry, which we used to find quite amusing, to be honest with you. I'll tell you a very quick little story. We'll have to go back about 10 years, I suppose, but Keith and I were having lunch in a restaurant in London because we were working on an idea of a project together, and we were chattering away, and there was a couple at another table. They got up after they'd finished their lunch, and they came over to the table, and they said, the guy said, I'm sorry to interrupt your meal, he said, but I just wanted to say how great it is to see that you've become friends at last. And I looked up and I went, that's what you think. I'm suing him at the moment. And the guy just looked dumbfounded and walked away. We just howled with laughter.
That's great.
Keith and I, we kept in touch a lot, and I went to his funeral, which was very, very sad.
I'm sure.
And it was he had a tremendous and a wonderful send-off, but I was just so sad. I mean, Keith and I, especially in the last, I suppose about the last 10, 12 years, became really close friends, the same as I was with John Lord, and lost John as well.
Sure, I remember that very clearly. Let's get up to current day. Now, you mentioned you guys have been in rehearsal. Can you give us kind of a sneak peek of with what to expect perhaps when you guys roll in October 7th to Ruth Eckert Hall? Obviously, I guess you're going to go early yes days and mid yes days and late yes days, right?
Yeah, I mean, John, Trevor and I have been talking about this for years. About doing this, I mean, I literally do mean years and years and years. And one of the things that we decided we would do is, yes, we want to do some classic Yes music because it's what we were involved with and what we love. And we had the basic guideline was that at least two of us had to have played on the tracks that we're doing. Mm. Whether or not that's a live version or a studio version, but. Then Trevor and I had a long talk, and we thought it would be great fun because whilst we want to have all the ingredients of the music, we thought it would be really a bit of fun. Say, for example, the pieces that I wasn't on originally, pieces that Trev did, whether it's on 90125 or Big Generator or The Ladder or whatever it might be, what we would do, what I would do, I would imagine that I was in the band at that time. So, yes, obviously you would play the most important lead parts, should there be any to do. But then to look at it and go, hold on, if I'd have been in the band at that time, what would I have played on those pieces? And you throw that into the work. So you've got all the original ingredients, but you throw those areas in. And Trevor's done exactly the same with the tracks that he didn't play on. He'll play all the important parts and the lead things in his own style. But then going, but also, you know, if I'd been in the band, I'd have done this as well. And I tell you what, that has proven so great. We just keep turning around and smiling at each other. And we've got such a great drummer and bass player in the band. I mean, it's just amazing.
Tell us about them real quick, if you can.
Yeah, can do. Lee Pomeroy, I've known for cracking nearly 20 years. He's genuinely reckoned in England and around Europe as being the best bass player that there is around. His big idol was Chris Squire. He adored Chris, and he's only 40, in his early 40s, and he just modelled himself and learned everything that Chris did. But of course, has then gone to another stage on his own. So he does everything Chris does and more. And as he says, I couldn't do anything without Chris. So he is just the most perfect person for this band. And Lou Molino III, he's our drummer, who's a great friend of Trevor's. He's worked a lot with Trevor and with loads of other bands and that as well. And he can rock like Alan, the technique of Bill. It's just a great band.
Good. Well, we're looking forward to it, no doubt. I know there's a lot of Yes fans, including myself, in Tampa Bay, and the date at Ruth Eckert Hall, which is just a perfect venue for you guys. That is going to be October 7th, and we will be awaiting for you, Rick, and we want to thank you for taking time to join us and update us on where everything is at and telling us some great stories, and we'll see you down the road in a couple of weeks.
That's very kind. Thank you.